within the beam elongate as though they were being drawn into wire. Turbo laser fire curved impossibly. One blast bent back on itself, slamming into the shields of the cruiser that had fired it. Ships contracted to tiny dots and disappeared entirely. With the brightness and distortion came a blow in the Force. It hammered at Kytus, a vast, instantaneous loss of life. Alana's sobs cut off. She slumped in Kytus's lap, mercifully relieved of the burden of consciousness. Then space darkened and twisted back to its normal shape. Where once scores of ships had floated and fought, now there was only nothingness. Or perhaps twisted wreckage, with no destructive beams or running lights to illuminate it. Proximity alarm screamed all across the Love Commander's bridge. Leia felt a yawning emptiness rise up to swallow her. She forced it back, saw Jaina turn toward her, pale-faced. She stood on shaky legs. What just happened? Han glanced between her and Jaina, then returned his attention to his sensors.
Something just appeared in back of us. In back of the... behind Colonel Solo's ship. Something huge. If its gravitic signature is any indication, then it faded. The proximity alarms thought we were too near a planetary mass.
He looked again, gave a grunt of surprise.
The two task forces are gone.
Gone? Just gone?
Just gone. Most of the starfighters are still out there, away from where the capital ships were.
Center point. Jaina's voice was subdued. That had to be center point station firing.
Yeah. Han banked sharply to port and accelerated. Colonel Solo's ship is behind us. Starfighters are headed our way from ahead. It's time to go.
The Anakin Solo, its hangars stuffed with surviving starfighters from not only its complement but also those of several second fleet vessels, its hyperdrive damaged by the gravity-wrenching effect of the attack, limped back into Coruscant space. Kytus paced the bridge, not having slept since the catastrophe. He wanted to spend every moment with Alana, to be there for her when she awakened from the deep sleep that had claimed her. But he could not. To be away from his duties for so long would alert his crew that he had other priorities. He could not have them asking questions, not even as loyal a crew as he commanded. The enemy had made Centerpoint Station's primary weapon operational, and had used it to try to kill him personally. It was a tribute. They knew he was the most significant individual in the galaxy, the one person who could lead the Alliance to victory. They had panicked, and they had failed to kill him. But without knowing it, they had tried to kill Alana. They would pay for that. Everyone who had supported Corellia during this action would die, or end up stamping out bits of Alliance trooper armor in a prison workshop, or be fed to Rancors. Captain Neville approached. The Quarren was as upright and formidable-looking as ever, but the skin of his face and mouth tentacles were paler than usual.
Sir, we're in planetary orbit. I'd like to transmit a request for permission to take a berth at the orbital shipyards. Get repairs underway immediately.
Kytus glanced at him. Granted.
Admiral Nyathol has sent a request that you meet with her immediately at the Senate building.
No. He needed to be present when Alana wakes. I can't leave the Anakin Solo at a time like this. Reply that we can have a meeting here or by holocom.
Yes, sir.
The meeting took place in Kytus's private office. Again, Admiral Nyathol stood and paced, while Kytus, imperturbable, sat.
The Second Fleet is in shambles!
Nyathol's voice was deeper than usual, its pitch lowered by emotion. Kytus nodded.
The flagship Blue Diver was lost, and Fleet Admiral Limpan with her!
Well, Kytus didn't think she was all that spectacular an admiral anyway. I know, it's a disaster. I told you it was a trap. We just had no conception of the scope of the trap. Lure me out into open space, send up some derelict warships with skeleton crews to hold me in place for a few moments, and then fire the biggest gun in the universe at us. It had the elegance of simplicity.
We just lost a lot of unlucky commanders and ships we cannot replace. The Corellians triggered us a flying junkyard for modern ships of the line. Confederation military strength may exceed ours now. With center point station active, it certainly does.
Kaidus smiled. Admiral, we've just won this war. That soft-spoken assertion stopped Nyathol in the midst of her pacing.
Say that again?
The Corellians just handed us the trillion-credit game prize, the solution to our problems. We've won.
How?
We go to the Corellian system and take Centerpoint Station from them, and then we point it at anyone we choose. Nyathol's skin darkened, a color change Kaidus suspected was similar to a blush or a flush of anger.
Ah, I had not realized it was so simple. Shall I pack a lunch?
Kaidus waved her sarcasm away. After Ben and I disabled Centerpoint, it wasn't worth the loss we'd sustain if we devoted all our forces to take it. And at that time, we wouldn't have been willing to use it immediately. But now, if we mount a major naval offensive at the moment they think our navy is at its weakest, we can take it. And now we have the will to use it. You and I, we are that will. The Admiral stood there for long moments, once again studying him, her own face inscrutable.
Do you have a plan?
I will by tomorrow. Nyathol nodded. She turned and left.
Aboard the Anakin Solo, main hangar bay.
Sial Antilles threaded her way through the Anakin Solo's main hangar bay. Ordinarily, this would have been no special task, but currently, the space was overcrowded with starfighters. Not just the vessel's usual complement, but most of the vehicles that had survived the Centerpoint Station attack. A diminutive woman with short brown hair and bangs that went awry whenever the faintest breeze crossed her face, Sial searched among the alphanumeric designations painted on walls, ceilings, and floor sections. B-17 was her destination, and only after she squeezed between two armored troop carrier shuttles did she spot it, an ordinary shuttle. She approached it from the front and waved at the uniformed pilot, dimly seen through the forward viewport. He waved back, and moments later, the vehicle's boarding ramp descended. She climbed the ramp with Quick.
Lieutenant... Captain Antilles reporting as requested.
The cockpit door swung open. In the doorway stood a man of average height. In the dress uniform of Galactic Alliance Starfighter Command, he was middle-aged, lean, with hair that had changed over the years from pale blonde to white, and features that were aristocratic but sympathetic. His eyes were a startling blue. He offered her a smile.
Welcome back, Sial.
Uncle Tycho!
She ran to him, wrapped her arms around him, and held him close for a moment.
It's so good to see you.
You act as though I were the one in danger.
He led her back into the main compartment, sat her down in one of the overstuffed chairs, and took a seat in the one opposite.
Captain Antilles, I thought that was a glitch when I saw it on the rescuee roster.
Sial shook her head.
A field promotion. I shot at Luke Skywalker, and they decided I warranted a raise in grade.
Though she tried, she couldn't keep the pain, the bitterness out of her voice.
A consolation prize for losing my entire command. And my fiancé, Tyam Rordan, fighter pilot off the frigate Maw Runner.
Tycho just shook his head.
I am so sorry.
Yeah,
she fidgeted. Her left knee began vibrating, early warning that nervous energy was going to cause it to start bouncing up and down soon. She pressed down on her knee with her palm.
What can I do for you, General?
You know that these days I'm serving as an analyst for Admiral Nyathol.
Sial nodded.
I wish you were training pilots again. The rookies could really use your experience.
Thanks. What I need from you is... well, the truth. The truth with no protective coloration, no filtering.
She considered.
Off the record? And have you swept this shuttle for listening devices?
Yes and yes. Remember, like you, I live in a mixed household. Pilots and spies.
That almost fetched a smile from her. But she didn't have any smiles left.
Fire away, General.
I need intelligent observations from a field officer's perspective. About morale, the course of the war, about Colonel Solo.
She had to think about it.
I'm not sure what to say. I don't have a context. Maybe that's the problem. How can you have a perspective if you have nothing to compare things with? I don't. My squad mates don't. I mean, didn't.
I don't understand.
I remember the Yuuzhan Vong War. I was only a kid, but it's all still so vivid. Everyone I knew was fighting for the same thing, survival. It was simple. If we lost, we died, and we died out. If we won, we didn't. This war, though. Those of us who were in uniform when it started trusted that they would tell us what it meant, and that it would make sense. But they told us, and it didn't.
She took a long, shuddery breath.
It's getting crazier and crazier out there. It's like both sides are starting to see each other as nothing but droids. I keep hearing stories about infantry units who report that they found enemy towns and compounds blown up, part of some Confederation's scorch and thwart policy. But Scuttlebutt has it that their ground forces are reporting the same thing about our towns and compounds, and I know we don't have a policy like that. And someone at Center Point Station pressed a button to wipe out our entire task force the other day. Pressed a button? I'm scared to death that they'll do it again. But I'm even more scared that next time, I'd be willing to push that button.
Finally, the tears came, and she put her head down into her hand.
Since this started, I've shot at one of my heroes, Luke Skywalker, and my own father. The Alliance and the Confederation both say awful things about both of them. Neither one of them deserves it. It doesn't make any sense.
Tycho's tone was kind, but his words pressed her on implacably.
And Colonel Solo?
Everyone's afraid of him. Everyone. Nobody talks about him. Have you ever heard of that? Someone whose own people never talk about him?
Once or twice. A long time ago.
Tycho sighed.
Sile, do you want out?
Jolted and angered by his words, she sat upright and glared at him.
I don't want to run. I just want it to make sense.
I'm not asking you to run or dishonor your uniform. I'm asking, all else being equal, do you want out?
No. I want to be doing something I think will help bring the war to an end. My captain's insignia, it's not worth the medal it's stamped from without that. I'm not going to dishonor my uniform, but the way things are going, I can't seem to bring honor to it. Do you know what I mean?
You're talking to a man who used to fly for Emperor Palpatine. Palpatine, whose subordinates never talked about him.
She wiped at her tears.
I'm sorry, Tycho. I forgot.
Don't apologize. You have nothing to apologize for.
He studied her.
You'll get orders in a day or two. They'll look awful. They'll look like something no commander with any sense would do to an ace like you. Don't protest. Don't make waves. Just go where they tell you. I'll be there.
Yes, General.
Corellia, Coronet, Command Bunker.
The hologram at the center of the darkened chamber showed a lean man in a dark officer's uniform, that of a Confederation general. His face was scarred, his body rigid. And he was only a double handspan over a meter tall, as Prime Minister Coyen had instructed his technical team to keep the hologram to a manageable size. The reduction in stature did not affect the general's voice, however. Rich with anger, it resonated, vibrating Coyen's sternum, echoing off the chamber walls.
Center Point Station is a Confederation resource. Utilizing it without coordinating with my office constitutes dereliction of duty, and more importantly, gross incompetence.
It's a Corellian resource, General Fenir. We chose to use it in an effort to end the war precipitously.
Coyen shrugged.
And we don't know that it hasn't had that effect. Jason Solo, one of their two chiefs of state, is dead. His partner, Admiral Nyathol, is more reasonable than he was.
Our stealth craft in the Coruscant system report the Anakin Solo reaching planetary orbit. How do you conclude that Solo is dead?
Coyen felt his stomach sink, as though he'd unwittingly stepped onto a turbolift
and it had suddenly plummeted 40 stories.
Our starfighters reported all Alliance capital ships in the engagement zone destroyed.
The Anakin Solo had apparently withdrawn from the engagement zone by the time the weapon was fired. So in your effort to eliminate the forces besieging Corellia, and one, only one of the Alliance's important strategists, you've given away the secret of the station's functionality, tipped the balance of power by a few percentage points, and otherwise accomplished nothing! Whereas if you'd worked with me and my office, we could have put together a much more telling stroke. One that genuinely would have turned the tide of the war.
Coyne shook his head.
We were lucky to have rooted out all spies who might have gotten the information about the station's repairs to the GA. Add your people to the mix. It becomes too complex to keep secrets.
I don't say this often, Coyne, but I'll say it now. You're an idiot!
Which makes you an even more exceptional idiot, for saying it to the man with the most destructive weapon ever created.
As you have the most destructive weapon ever created, you're clearly capable of defending the Corellian system without aid from the rest of the Confederation. No need for synchronized fleet movements, for sharing intelligence with the other worlds, for food, medicines, supplies.
That brought Coyne up short. Until the station was operational again, those resources were incalculably valuable.
Don't threaten me, General. You wouldn't like the results.
He gestured to his technicians, invisible outside the glow of the hologram, and the image of Fenrir disappeared, plunging the chamber into blackness. Gulping, Coyne turned toward the chamber exit. He probably shouldn't have done that. On the other hand, it was important to show the Confederation which world held the controls, and which ruler was boss. The answers were Corellia and Sodrus Coyne.
Kashyyyk, Maetel Base, hangar housing the Millennium Falcon.
Jaina trotted into the hangar office, a set of improvised rooms set off from the rest of the building by sheets of corrugated durasteel that now served as headquarters and workshop for the Alima hunters, and paused just inside the door. The main office was dark. Jag? His voice floated through the curtain separating this chamber from the next.
Workshop.
She moved to and through the curtain. We have some preliminary results from Talon Card and the data from Jason's shuttle. Seeing what stood in the center of the workshop, she stopped short, staring. Surrounded by tables and shelves piled high with metal parts and electronic components, was a man. Probably a man, though he could have been some new variety of battle droid. Most of him was covered in a jumpsuit of crinkled, reflective silver-gray material. Over this were attached a helmet, metal gauntlets, boots, a mechanical rig held against his back by two straps crossing in an X pattern across his chest, and a broad belt holding pouches and a holster carrying an oversized blaster pistol. All these accoutrements had similar metallic surfaces resembling brushed silver. The helmet was the one Jag had worn aboard the Love Commander during the last engagement with Alima Rar, and the gauntlets were the crush gaunts sent by Boba Fett. Jaina scowled. Why is it I always catch you playing dress-up?
Just assembling my gear. My current kit.
Jag pushed up the visor of his helmet, revealing his eyes and the bridge of his nose. Jaina approached and wrapped her knuckles against his chest. It rang, the noise dulled by the cloth covering it. And the breastplate, too.
Not exactly the height of fashion, is it?
Well, I'll forgive you for wearing too much shiny stuff if it's useful.
Oh, it's all useful.
Jag tapped each item in turn as he explained.
You're familiar with the helmet, the breastplate, and the crush gaunts.
Jaina nodded.
The backpack is a thruster. It's not much use in Coruscant-level gravity, but in low-grav conditions, it will get me around. Help make up for the fact that I can't do Jedi leaps. The blaster pistol I designed from the ground up.
He drew it and managed a credible Han Solo spin around his trigger finger, despite the presence of his crush gaunts.
It's oversized, so I can draw and fire it while wearing the gauntlets. It's engineered to function in the temperatures and vacuum of deep space. I can fire it while extra-vehicular.
He holstered it again.
Plus, It has a feature I don't think any blaster has ever had.
What's that?
He shook his head, and the bridge of his nose crinkled as if he was smiling. Jaina felt a flash of annoyance, but let it pass.
How long have you been working on this?
I've been carrying pieces of it for years, gradually adding items as I learned more about our quarry.
He shrugged.
It doesn't make me a Jedi, but we don't need another Jedi. We need something she can't predict. Also, if I take the crush guns off, I can pilot a starfighter in this. The suit offers all the usual virtues of a flight suit.
Well, I have something your suit doesn't have. From her belt, she extracted a piece of flimsy and held it up before Jag's eyes. He focused on the astronomical coordinates written on it.
Is that what I hope it is?
Probable coordinates for Brisha Sayo's habitat. Care to go there and have a picnic?
Definitely. You tell the tall fellow with half a name. Should I invite your parents?
Jaina nodded. I think they have a right to be there.
Aboard the Anakin Solo.
Alana's breath came in gasps as she rolled over in her bed, her eyes closed, her face flushed. In his chair beside her, Kytus winced. The nightmares had come again for her. It had been 2 days since her collapse, and she'd alternated between deep sleep and troubled dreams. Then Alana's eyes opened. She looked around, confused, trying to make sense of her surroundings, and caught sight of Kytus. She drew away from him, huddling against the wall.
I want to go home.
This has to be your home for the time being. You're safer here than anywhere. She shook her head.
I'm safest with Mommy.
Bad people keep coming for you when you're with your mother. You need to be here.
They all died, didn't they?
Kytus nodded. Many people died. And though I tried to get you far away from them, I couldn't get far enough away.
You were...
Alana struggled for the words.
You were bad. I hate you.
Another stab to his heart. No, you don't. You can't hate someone who loves you. I love you, Alana.
No, you don't. You took me away from Mommy. You said you had permission and you lied. You're the same as anyone else who wants to hurt me. I hate you.
No. Alana, you can't. It's not possible. And I'll tell you why. Kytus remained in his chair by force of will. Every instinct made him want to hold the little girl, to comfort her. Every instinct but the one that told him she needed to be free to decide, free to act. You're right that I took you without permission, but I don't need permission.
Yes, you do!
Alana, Tenel Ka has the right to decide where you go and what you learn and how you are to be protected. And she has that right because she's your mommy. She's had that right for all your life so far. I have the same right because I'm your daddy. Alana froze, her expression transforming from defiant to unbelieving. She shook her head. Kytus waited, pouring his love for her into the Force, trying to send it through his eyes into hers. He nodded. You always knew you had a daddy. Your mommy had to keep who it was a secret. But now you're old enough to understand it. I'm your daddy. He felt the fear within her, the lingering pain from the events of 2 days earlier, begin to erode. Through the Force, he offered her nothing but the truth. For the first time in months, perhaps years, there was nothing of Sith training to his thoughts, nothing of the Jedi, no strategy, no planning. There was only what he felt. She came to him, clambering over the bed and into his lap. She put her arms around his neck.
Daddy!
Yes, your daddy, forever and ever. He held her to him, stroked her hair. And when the war is over, and the bad people have been taught how wrong they were, and everyone is happy again, we can tell everyone that I'm your daddy. And you can sit right next to me, and help me decide how things are going to be for everyone. Won't that be nice?
Korriban, world of the Sith.
On a ruin of a planet, They stood in the ruins of a citadel, themselves the ruins of an ancient organization, the Sith Order. In a circular meeting chamber, its stone walls darkened by age and weathering, they stood in a circle, dark hooded robes obscuring their identities. One of them, a dark-skinned human female, whose pale geometric pattern tattoo stood out in sharp relief on the skin of her cheeks, bowed to the assembly.
"Yes, my lord. I have news and even speculation concerning Alimarar."
"We will hear them, Dissian."
The words came from the man guiding this conclave, a human whose fully white eyes suggested blindness, but whose alert mannerisms said otherwise. Dissian continued.
"The Ersat Sith holocron provided to her traced her path back to her point of origin. It is an asteroid belt in a star system near Bemeel. When a cloaked ship comes available, I will requisition its use to pinpoint her location exactly."
The white-eyed leader's voice suggested skepticism.
"You think her significant enough to devote important resources to such a mission?"
"I do."
"Why?"
Dissian took a long breath, a delaying tactic allowing her a few more seconds to compose her argument.
"In one of my assumed identities as a Confederation intelligence operative, I received a considerable amount of information on the hunt for Alimarar, which must necessarily include information and speculation about her. It seems that among the resources she inherited from Lumaya is a force technique permitting her the projection of phantoms across space. It appears in every way to match the lost technique of Darth Vectivis."
At those words, the murmur rose again.
"Vectivis's history is clear. He was a fraud,"
someone muttered.
"A fraud with an art that would benefit us all,"
said someone else.
"I was not here for her visit. Could this Alimarar be turned to our ends?"
yet a third questioned.
"I think not. She seemed as insane as a piranha beetle with a needle through its brain."
The voice was barely audible above the other voices. The white-eyed man cleared his throat, and the others went silent.
"We must recapture the woman, extract the secrets of the technique from her, and seize the power source she utilizes."
There was regret in Dissian's tone as she replied,
"I think not, my lord. The Jedi are now homing in on her location. Knowledge is much easier to obtain than to contain. Once they know where her base is, we will never be able to preserve that secret."
The white-eyed man considered.
"Very well. You were correct, Dissian. This is of highest priority. We will not concern ourselves with a cloaked ship, but assign a fully armed warship to the task. I am recalling the Poison Moon and assigning it to you for this mission. It will be equipped with explosives sufficient to destroy an asteroid. You will use it to locate the dark side energy source used to power Vectivis' Force Phantom technique and obliterate it. You will obtain any Sith artifacts in Alimarar's possession. You will also capture Alimarar, or, if circumstances warrant, kill her."
Dissian bowed again.
"It will be my pleasure."
Sanctuary Moon of Endor.
They made a curious parade, Luke decided. Not that he hadn't been a part of many curious parades in the course of his curious life. First went the Hapen Security Vanguard, four spectacular-looking women. They wore the most stylish body armor imaginable, its graceful lines broken up by green and brown camouflage patterns that made the armor difficult to pick out amid Endor's forest vegetation.
Behind the security guard by some 10 meters, walking side by side, came Luke and Queen Mother Tenel Ka, dressed completely inappropriately for their surroundings. Luke wearing his black Jedi Grandmaster garments, Tenel Ka sporting a flowing gown in shimmering metallic shades of blue. 10 meters farther back were the droids C-3PO and R2-D2. The main body of the odd safari walked behind the droids, Jedi Masters Saba Sebatin and Silgal, along with half a dozen advisors to the Queen Mother. At the rear of the party were four more Hapen security specialists. Luke pitched his voice as a whisper.
Quite a retinue for a little walk in the woods. How many do you have to take with you when you just want to go to the refresher?
Her whispered answer was matter of fact.
In my own palace, none. In foreign palaces, a minimum of four.
They walked in silence for a little while. Tenel Ka waited until they found a broad clearing. At its center was a wide, nearly flat stone. She raised her voice so that all could hear.
This will do.
Luke sat at one edge of the stone. Tenel Ka sat next to him. She took a deep breath.
You know that I turned my back on the Alliance, demanding that Jason be removed from power. Then I withdrew from the war altogether and did not pursue my agenda against Jason any longer.
Yes, I assumed you had a good reason.
I don't know if it's a good reason. It's a very personal reason. Jason kidnapped my daughter, Alana. He threatened to kill her if I did not resume my duties as an Alliance member.
Luke winced. I wish I could say I was surprised.
I think that he could probably do it. Kill my baby. The situation cut me in two. The Queen Mother arguing one course of action. Alana's mother arguing another. Alana's mother won.
I understand.
But after what happened a few days ago, the firing of Centerpoint Station,
Tenel Ka's voice wavered.
It shows the ends the Confederation is willing to go to. It shows how insane this war has become. The Hapes Consortium has been rebuilding for more than 15 years from the damage caused the last time the station was fired. The Corellians can use it to destroy whole worlds if they want.
Luke nodded.
A while back, I thought that Alana and I could perhaps run away. They'd hunt us down, of course. The Alliance or my political opponents from Hapes. Alana and I would die, but we'd die together, in each other's arms. Now it looks like we won't even have that tiny comfort. We're going to die, never having seen each other again.
You don't know that. If you saw something like that as a Force vision, it isn't necessarily the true future.
I don't see visions of the future anymore. Not really. I just feel death and failure all around us, consuming us like a fire.
Tenel Ka looked down at her hand, resting palm up in her lap. It twitched, and Luke sensed she longed for her light be there, lit, with enemies in front of her, me she could attack personally.
I have to be the Queen, Master Skywalker. I have to decide to run my people.
Yes.
To turn my figure evil to represent...
Yes.
I have to turn my fleet to get evil.
Yes.
There was regret in Dissian's tone as she replied,
I think not, my lord. The Jedi are now homing in on her location. Knowledge is much easier to obtain than to contain. Once they know where her base is, we will never be able to preserve that secret.
The white-eyed man considered.
Very well. You were correct, Dissian. This is of highest priority. We will not concern ourselves with a cloaked ship, but assign a fully armed warship to the task. I am recalling the Poison Moon and assigning it to you for this mission. It will be equipped with explosives sufficient to destroy an asteroid. You will use it to locate the dark side energy source used to power Victivus' Force Phantom technique and obliterate it. You will obtain any Sith artifacts in Alimara's possession. You will also capture Alimara, or, if circumstances warrant, kill her.
Dissian bowed again.
It will be my pleasure.
Sanctuary Moon of Endor.
They made a curious parade, Luke decided. Not that he hadn't been a part of many curious parades in the course of his curious life. First went the Hapen Security Vanguard, four spectacular-looking women. They wore the most stylish body armor imaginable, its graceful lines broken up by green and brown camouflage patterns that made the armor difficult to pick out amid Endor's forest vegetation. Behind the security guard by some 10 meters...
System MZX-32905, near Bimil.
The Millennium Falcon dropped out of hyperspace well outside the asteroid belt of star system MZX-32905. A moment later, a starfighter appeared nearby, trailing the Falcon by a few dozen kilometers. Jag's X-Wing. This meant that Jaina and Zek's stealth X's were there as well. Han didn't bother searching for them on his sensors. He might pick up traces, but it would be a pointless exercise. Leia activated the comm board, adjusted the transmission to its lowest power setting, and directed it precisely toward Jag's starfighter. We've begun the passive sensor scan, and we're running computations on all observable asteroids of the appropriate size, plotting their locations when Jason and Ben visited.
Lumaya's satellite habitat.
Alima felt a little ripple in the Force. It was of no more consequence than if a normal person had had a dream in which a menacing shape stood over her bed as she slept. But Alima had long ago learned to trust incidents that seemed to be of little consequence. She threw off her bedsheet and rose, then dressed hurriedly, as hurriedly as a being could with only one working arm. Casting out in the Force, she could feel nothing but the beautiful, malevolent furnace of power hundreds of meters beneath her. The wellspring of energy with which she would someday be able to balance the galaxy. There was nothing to cause the ripple she had felt, but she had felt it. She took one of the few working turbolifts up to the habitat's top level, the observatory, with its curved shelves full of artifacts and a transparent steel dome facing the stars. Reclining on a comfortable sofa, she relaxed into the Force, seeking any hint, any anomaly that would explain what she had felt. Then she felt it again, the ripple. Someone was hunting her. Someone was here to kill her. She smiled. She had been hunted many times. But this was the first time she had ever been hunted, in a place where she made the rules. All the rules.
Aboard the frigate, Poison Moon.
Dissian stared through the bridge's forward viewports, which offered a view of stars, and irregular black patches obscuring expanses of stars. The black patches, she knew, were the largest of the asteroids in this field, receiving little or none of the light from the system's sun. Navigating an asteroid field in a 150-meter-long frigate using only passive sensors was not the easiest of tasks. Dissian did not unnecessarily intrude on the concentration of Waynus, her chief pilot. Waynus tapped a command sequence into his keyboard. The main bridge monitor just above the forward viewports darkened into a view of the starfield before them, then began zooming. Moments later, it displayed a view, heavily pixelated at extreme magnification, of a roughly spherical asteroid, visible only as a crescent of faint sunlight. Waynus looked up to catch Dissian's attention.
Your target, Captain.
Excellent. Plot a course to the vicinity of that asteroid. Keep other asteroids between it and us as long as possible. I want little or no direct line of sight on us.
Stealth approach. Understood.
Waynus turned back to his keyboard and began plotting out the complicated approach.
Sensor reading.
That was Athela, the Poison Moon's sensor officer. Dissian cleared her throat.
Perhaps some more information would be in order.
Athela glanced at her captain, evidently trying to gauge whether Dissian was being polite or sarcastic.
Two targets, too far away for our visual reading. Neither one has a transponder active.
Fuel emission sensor readings suggest one is a starfighter, and the other is in the class of a yacht or light freighter. The starfighter is approaching our target asteroid. The other vehicle is staying on station 100 kilometers or so from our target.
Dissian considered. Sneaking up on a rogue Jedi in an antiquated frigate was tricky enough, without the complication of additional observers. Still, it had to be done.
Continue as ordered. However, we may have to make a fast run from the final asteroid to our target. I want all crews and asteroid buster bombs standing by at the shuttles. I want all weapons primed and ready.
Wayness nodded, unperturbed.
Yes, Captain.
Jag took the lead in his X-Wing. It was only fitting, because of the 3 starfighters, his was the only one not equipped for stealth. Jaina and Zek hung back in their stealth X's as Jag approached the habitat. Squat and dome-topped, set atop Plas Creek columns holding it meters above the asteroid's surface, archaic of design, and pitted with meteorite strikes sustained across centuries, it exactly matched the habitat described in Ben Skywalker's report of the Brisha Sayo encounter. Jag brought his vehicle in quickly enough that he could accelerate away at a good clip if weapons turrets suddenly sprouted out of the habitat's surface. But the habitat remained inert, and he felt a moment of doubt. Was Alima even there? Leia's last tight beam transmission, minutes earlier, had indicated that she had felt some movement in the Force, something distinct from the pool of dark energy waiting at the asteroid's center. But that didn't mean their quarry was home. Well, if she wasn't, her hunters could take up residence and wait for her. His X-Wing comm board reported a signal, an automated query from a hangar facility offering landing instructions. He ignored it. He decelerated as he neared the habitat. He sent his X-Wing into a shallow dive, activating repulsor lifts as he came within meters of the stony asteroid's surface and glided in underneath the habitat, between its support pillars. A column of light emerged from the center of the habitat's underside, illuminating a section of railed track. The track led down to the asteroid's surface and into it through a broad gash in the stone. Jag nodded. The light had to come from the chamber described in Ben Skywalker's report, a room that housed the railcar access to the mines below. The hatch into the chamber was open, with the chamber's air probably being contained by atmosphere shielding. Not that the presence or lack of atmosphere mattered to him. Not now. He set his X-Wing down almost directly beneath the chamber opening and powered down. Then, bypassing warning indicators and programming implemented to prevent accidents, he raised his canopy, venting his cockpit atmosphere into space. He pulled his crush gaunts from the webbing that kept them secure at his feet, donned them, then unstrapped and activated his low-grav thruster pack. Jaina and Zek, their stealth X's side by side and mere meters apart, saw the hangar's blast doors begin to slide open, revealing a large lit chamber beyond, and Jag fell, standing at one door edge, waving them in. Jaina goosed her thruster and glided forward, Zek pacing her. As they approached, Jag waved downward, indicating a litter of items on the floor just inside the door. Jaina saw barrels, wires, electronic components. Jag held up his hands together, then spread them, miming the effects of an explosion. Jaina nodded. So Alima had left them a trap, a bomb, what looked like an improvised bomb. If it was improvised, the odds were improved that Alima Rar was still here, or had only recently fled. The Jedi set their vehicles down in the center of the hangar. Jag shut the outer doors and approached as they raised their canopies. His visor was up.
2 bombs so far.
He gestured toward the litter on the floor and toward the edge of the door where it rested on its guiding rail.
Simple ones, thrown together. But no Sith ship.
Jaina rolled out of her cockpit and dropped to the floor. There was something malevolent about this hangar. Something different from the energy that suffused this place. A different flavor. She searched for it in the Force and found it nearby. A loathing mixed with patience, anger mixed with servility. Whatever its source was, it had recently rested against a nearby wall and had left only minutes before. Disappointment weighed down on her. She's fled. Zek moved up to join them. He shook his head.
No, she hasn't.
Can't you feel it? With a pointing finger, he traced a path from the corner where that patient loathing had waited, out through the hangar doors, and then down, straight down into the asteroid. Now Jaina could feel it, could follow that trail. The vehicle, for it had to be Alima's Sith craft, had been here until recently, then had flown down through the rift in the asteroid surface. Alima and her craft waited far below.
Jag shrugged.
She knows we're here. Scratch off the element of surprise. We'll just have to show her some other surprises. Problem is, though the habitat is pressurized and the caverns are, there's about a 15-meter gap of hard vacuum between the two.
Not a problem.
Jaina drew her Jedi cloak around her.
We have the equivalent of flight suits on under our robes. With flight helmets or with our emergency masks, we can survive several minutes worth of hard vacuum.
Jag flipped his visor shut. His next words, through the helmet speaker, were amplified rather than muffled.
Let's go, then. Let's end this.
Aboard the Poison Moon.
It's a Corellian light freighter. The disc shape is distinctive.
Dissian, jolted by Athela's words, looked at her sensor officer.
Compare the vehicle's distinctive markings and modifications with known records of the Millennium Falcon.
Athela looked up. Her expression startled.
It's a match, Captain.
Certainty exceeds 98%.
Dissian took a deep breath. The Falcon, especially if it was captained by Han Solo, would be quite a prize, captured or destroyed. Dissian struggled to keep her tone normal.
No mistakes now. We have double the Falcon's firepower and the element of surprise, but none of that means anything if we make a mistake. So we will continue our approach, and we will be perfect. We will make our run on the Falcon, and we will be perfect. We will launch our crews to raid the habitat and situate the bombs on the asteroid, and we will be... What will we be?
The bridge crew members offered their answer in unison.
Perfect.
Perfect.
That's right. Perfect.
Jag leapt up, high above the opening in the floor, and dropped through into hard vacuum. Passing through the habitat's artificial gravity, he slowed in his descent but continued downward. The metal track close by, into the deeper darkness of the large gash in the asteroid surface below.
I'm in.
He cycled through his helmet sensors. The basic sensors showed cavern walls all around, at distances of 30 to 100 meters. There were a few faint gleams from glow rods on the metal rails. Other than that, all was dark.
You're going to need some lights.
A moment later, his sensors showed Jaina and Zek dropping feet first after him. They held lit glow rods.
We just felt her reaching out for us.
Jaina and Zek vectored in their slow free fall. The maneuver allowed them to drift to within reach of the metal track. There was something on his sensors. Something big, but indistinct, on the far side of the widest part of this cavern. Jag rotated and pointed in that direction, alerting the others. It rushed toward them, streaming through the air, growing more distinct as it came. A flock of Minox.
Aboard the Millennium Falcon.
A thump against the Falcon's cockpit viewport prompted Leia to turn forward again. There was something outside the viewport, resting against it. A gray, fleshy mass with an enormous gaping mouth full of sharp teeth. Han stared back at the thing, unruffled.
Minox. Sweetheart, give me a minute. I'll burn him off.
He began typing in the commands Leia knew would send electric currents through the Falcon's outer hull.
Wait!
Leia reached out through the Force toward the Minox. As she did so, it looked away from Han, straight at her.
In the Force, it was her husband.
Leia gulped.
Burn that and you burn yourself. That Minox is a Force phantom, and it's you.
Han looked outraged.
A Minox? Kill me, sure, but does she have to insult me?
Han.
Hang on, princess. If I can't burn it off, I'll shake it off. As Leia grabbed for the back of her chair, Han hit the thrusters.
Aboard the Poison Moon.
The Falcon is maneuvering.
Dissian gave Athela a nod and returned her attention to the forward monitor. It showed the Corellian freighter whirling in place, then accelerating away from the asteroid, and then, just as abruptly, vectoring to starboard. Dissian cocked her head.
Orders, Captain!
Wait until the Falcon is oriented away from us on one of her maneuvers. Then begin your run. The instant I determine the Falcon has detected us, I'll issue the command, go. This means all weapons open fire on the Falcon. All shuttles launch instantly.
Yes, Captain.
What are we?
Perfect, Captain.
That's right.
The stream of Minox, 20 at least, flew straight at Jaina and her companions. She reached out in the Force to find them, and felt incongruously complex presences instead. One of them, the lead Minox, was unmistakably Jag, or at least bore his unique signature in the Force. The rest were unfamiliar to her, but definitely more complex, more alive in the Force than Minox.
They're all phantoms. One of them is you, Jag.
She got a grunt of confirmation. The lead Minox flew straight at Jag. He hit his thruster and twisted aside. The digits at the end of his right wing arm, grasping at him, missed him by a meter. Its lashing tail missed him by centimeters. Jag maintained his lateral thruster burn, carrying him away from the Minox and the Jedi. Most of the Minox followed him. Four veered toward the Jedi, a flyby attack made by lashing tails. Jaina and Zek got their hands on the metal track and had no difficulty twisting out of harm's way as the Minox attacked and passed. Jag's voice was calm, unrattled.
Keep going. I'll lead these away. We'll divide Alima's concentration. See if we can overload her.
Aboard the Millennium Falcon.
Han spun the Falcon, a barrel roll that would have made it next to impossible for a real Minox to reattach itself to her hull. But he lost sight of the creature by eye and by sensor, and wondered if it had managed to clamp onto the hull despite his maneuvers. Leia gripped the back of her chair in a ferocious Wookiee hug and glared at him.
Remind me why I ever unstrap myself while I'm aboard this crate.
Because you're still looking for thrills. That's why you're still with me. Where's the Minox, sweetheart?
Leia's face cleared as she searched in the Force. Then her expression began to change to one of alarm.
Incoming fire!
Han put the Falcon into another gymnastic tumble, even as he saw Leia's expression alter. Lances of light glared by outside as linked turbo lasers fired on them.
Where'd she come from?
On Han's sensor board, closing fast, was a small capital ship. An interceptor-class frigate, to judge from her elongated spar of a body, broadened chisel-shaped bow, and blocky stern. As Han watched, thruster flares lit from the flanks and top hull of the frigate, and shuttles of several different vehicle classes launched, angling away from the frigate, away from the Falcon, toward the asteroid.
Where's the Minox?
I don't know. Gone. In a brief moment of straight-line travel, Leia got to the front of her chair and hopped into it, facing backward to forestall any sneak attack from that direction, and resumed her death grip on the seat back.
Oh, now it's back again!
It was then that Alima Rar's voice floated, sweet and mocking, from deep within the Falcon.
Han. Han Solo.
The attack came as Jaina and Zek shot down through the hole into the next cavern. Inert lumps on the rim of the hole suddenly erupted into movement, became bipedal figures swinging 2-meter clubs. Reflexively, Jaina lit her lightsaber and parried. Her blow severed the club, revealing it to be a length of durasteel rail 3 or 4 centimeters in diameter. Her attacker was a protocol droid, sky blue, of ancient design and manufacture. Jaina hurtled past it. She heard a pained oof! And looked up to see Zek meters above her, descending more slowly. His attacker's rail was pinned under his left arm. His attacker, a scarlet protocol droid, still held the other end.
Sorry.
Zek twisted, and then he was a meter away from the track, his attacker right next to it.
As Jaina watched, the protocol droid's head began banging against every cross tie on the track, causing the head to bounce back and forth. The additional impacts and friction slowed Zek still more, causing him to drop farther behind.
Thought it might have been a force phantom. Didn't attack it before it hit me.
Are you hurt?
A couple of ribs cracked, I think. Not too bad.
It sounded worse than that. Zek's breathing was labored. The red droid's head came off. The rest of its body went limp. Zek gestured, and both it and the middle rail went flying off into the darkness. Jaina returned her attention to her surroundings. Things weren't too bad. Then Jaina felt a pulse of malevolence, followed by something approaching her. Something too massive for her to deflect, moving too fast for her to dodge. The stream of Minox flitted by Jag, passing within meters, their angry eyes fixed on him. Several flicked their tails at him. Two swooped close enough to be real threats. He raised his left arm, caught a tail end across his crushed aunt. The blow did not scar the metal. With his right hand, he missed the other tail, but it lashed across his chest, cutting a razor-thin gash in his flight suit, but doing no harm to the Beskar breastplate beneath. The blow sent him tumbling through the air in the Minox wake. The Minox reeled in unison. His blaster hand twitched, every instinct telling him to draw and fire, but they flew past too quickly. When they swept by again, he blocked three tail lashes before they were passed, and then felt a jerk as a fourth tail, grappling rather than lashing, wrapped around his left ankle and towed him along in the Minox wake. Descending in Jaina's wake, Zek felt the attack the instant Jaina did, felt its power and speed, and its intent. It was aimed at Jaina. Reflexively, Zek lashed out with the force, pushing. Jaina shot downward as if fired from an ancient artillery piece. Something flashed by a meter overhead. Something silver. It severed the track there, leaving a clean break in the metal rails. A fraction of a second later, it hit the far wall of the cavern with a dull flash of light and a resounding boom. Zek turned his attention toward the source of the attack. It was outside the range of his vision, but he could feel it now that it was on the offensive, no longer lying in wait. It had to be 100 meters or more away, though exact distances were difficult to predict through the force. It reeked of dark side energy and intent. Zek could almost see it, reading its self-image, a large ball, webbed wings projecting from it, a weapon spike protruding from the top, a landing spike from its bottom. Zek read its movements and intentions as it acted. Its top spike was aimed toward Jaina. Now it canted upward, aiming at Zek, and prepared to fire again. Zek grabbed the track with his free hand and pushed off, adding energy from the force to his movement, and hurtled downward. A fraction of a second later, something flashed by over his head and sliced through the track there, then slammed into the far cavern wall. Zek grimaced. He was fighting a starfighter, or the equivalent of one, and all he had was his lightsaber. At least he could serve as a distraction, keeping this thing off Jaina. As he reached the top of the remaining portion of track below, the spot where Jaina had almost been hit, he angled himself so that his feet came down on one of its cross ties.
Jaina, you go on. I can deal with this.
How?
Jaina's tone was flat, disbelieving.
Don't distract me with questions. Just go.
He felt Jaina's anger at him, at Alima Rar, but he felt too her acceptance. She knew it was the right thing to do. Divide Alima's concentration. Attack her on as many fronts as possible. The thing out in the darkness, the Sith ship, for so it had to be, drifted laterally, under power, perhaps trying to determine whether Zek could track it. Zek continued staring in the direction he had been originally. Then, something occurred to him, and he grinned. Abandoning his Jedi detachment, he poured emotion into the Force. Contempt for his enemy, disparaging dismissal of the Sith ship's worth. He felt his enemy's anger grow, and winced as it lashed out at him, grasping in the Force. But this was no attack. He could feel its thoughts now. He opened himself to the darkness. It flooded into him, engulfing him, gagging him. Abruptly, his surroundings were much clearer in his mind. The exact location, the appearance of that Sith meditation sphere. Yes, that was what it was. We're now clear to him.
You are Jedi.
Am I? I have been many things. I was a Jedi a minute ago. What am I now?
Not to be trusted.
Zek let some amusement creep into his thoughts.
And yet you trust her.
He pictured Alima Rar in his mind, and let his memories of her as a young Jedi Knight color his vision. The meditation sphere's reply was tinged with contempt.
Not trust. Obey. Must obey.
Because she knows a secret or two? Do you obey anything that knows the dark ways? You would obey me then.
The meditation sphere did not reply. A presentiment of victory, like adrenaline, flashed through Zek.
That's it, isn't it? All you need is the right order, from the right Darksider.
There was no answer.
What are you called?
I am Ship.
Zek snorted, amused and contemptuous at the same time.
You are stupid and simplistic, but I will do you a favor anyway. I free you.
He could tell that Chip received his words, but he felt no indication of understanding. Of course not. This was a vehicle. It was made to serve. It would always serve. The question was, what would it serve?
I free you from Alima Rar. I order you to leave her, to leave this place. I order you to find a master better suited to your nature. I command you to go, as fast as you can, ignoring all commands, all cries for help.
Into his words he poured his own power of will, and it felt joined, strengthened by the power of this dark place. His own strength swelled, bloating out beyond the confines of his body, growing like an explosion, until its fringes engulfed Ship. There, within Ship, was a hard knot of resistance. Older orders, planted by Alima Rar. Zek saw them as a mound, like a standing stone. He lashed that stone with his own strength and saw it begin to erode, flaking away, dissolving. In moments, it was gone, reduced to nothingness. Zek felt a sort of dark joy rise up within Ship, and then the meditation sphere was accelerating upward, toward the exit out of the chamber. An instant later, it was gone.
Zek sagged, relieved. Jaina would live. He would live.
He would descend to where Ship knew Alima to be. Zek would kill Alima, cutting her until no remaining piece could sustain life. Then he would kill Jack and be rid of that moralistic, interfering simulation of a man. That, of course, he would have to do in such a way that it did not distress Jaina. And finally, there would be Jaina. He would reforge the link between them, and through it pour his thoughts, his love. He would do so until she understood, until she loved and obeyed him, until she was his. Worry suddenly gnawed at him, like the sharp teeth of some undercity rodent. That's not right. Slowly, he lowered himself to sit on the top cross tie of the track, wrapping his legs around the rail for security. That's not what he should be thinking. The dark side was flooding him now, pouring its toxins into his thoughts. He tried to shove it out, to become what he had been just a few minutes before. But it was strong, so very strong, and it laughed at his pathetic efforts. Over the comlink, Jaina called for Zek, for Jag. She got no answer. That was not entirely unexpected. These personal comlinks could transmit across many kilometers, but not through stone or thick duracrete. A touch of force exertion brought her alongside the track again. Alert to presences in the force, she felt them off to her left. Then they were closer, moving into the range of her glow rod. The flock of Minox. The rearmost of them now towed Jag, who flailed helplessly. The foremost of them came on, tail lashing, and struck at her as it passed. She dodged the blow with minimal effort. The other Minox, strung up behind like a parade, wheeled in the first one's wake, preparing for one attack after another. Jaina worked the vertical rail track as a gymnast would a set of exercise bars, swinging her wide of every tail attack, or interposing the rails between her and an incoming tail, until only the last Minox remained. Jag, in its grip, struggled and waved frantically at her. Jaina extended her hand to catch his, then yanked it back, allowing him to be towed past. As she did, Jag changed in form and dimension, becoming smaller, slighter. His outstretched hand suddenly had a blue-black lightsaber blade in it, and as Jaina pulled away, the blade crossed the spot where her torso had been. It cut a gash in the front of her robe, but did not catch the skin beneath. Abruptly, it was Alima Rar being towed, the young, unmaimed Alima, and she stared angrily at Jaina as she and her Minok passed. Jaina grinned at them. Predictable, Alima. Predictable. The other Minoks were suddenly gone, fading out of existence, like the details of a dream in the moments after awakening. Alima swung up onto the last Minok's back, riding it as she would a tauntaun. The creature circled, keeping Jaina and Alima safely out of range of each other. Alima's reply was similarly light-hearted.
We wish to thank you for coming here, and making it more convenient for us to kill you.
Aboard the Millennium Falcon.
Despite Han's maddening maneuvers with the Falcon, despite his frequent swearing and the way the Falcon shuddered whenever her shield sustained a hit from the pursuing frigate, Leia kept her attention on the doorway to the access corridor at the rear of the cockpit. And when the walls of the corridor began to glow, illuminated by a blue-black lightsaber blade that had to be just around the corridor, Leia leapt from her seat, moved to stand in the doorway, and lit her own blade. Alima stepped into view, again young and unmarred. She rushed Leia, throwing all her effort into a savage attack, without the added elements of acrobatics. Neither woman spoke, but their faces told the story of how the duel proceeded. Alima began with a mocking smile. Within the time it took to throw a dozen failed blows, it had faded, replaced by anger. Leia had not bothered to hide her worry and determination, but as Alima grew angrier, Leia allowed a sweet, condescending smile to cross her features. Baffled, Alima stepped back.
We are young. You are old. You will tire. Or the ship firing on you, whoever it is, will hit your ship, and you will watch your husband die.
Leia nodded agreeably.
Yes, I keep hearing that sort of thing. Across 40 years now, the same speech.
One of the downsides of being old. Alima's lip curled, and she lunged again. Alima stared at Jaina, as though the rage she felt could somehow burn holes in the Jedi. She drew a deep breath, signal of a tirade to come, and then stopped, looking upward. Jaina felt it too, a sudden sense of satisfaction in the dark energy of this place. It was growing, swelling, absorbing, eating.
Eating Zek!
Jaina gasped. She reached out through the Force to Zek, but he was suddenly no longer there. Not in any form she could recognize. Alima laughed.
There, your first loss of the day, with more to come.
As a Minok banked to pass before Jaina again, Alima turned toward the Jedi, smiling.
No answer for us. We...
Then she froze, her eyes going wide. Jaina felt a sudden sense of freedom. Something was leaving this place. Something dark and wicked. And Alima Rar paled to a lighter shade of blue. The Twi'lek shook her head.
Ship!
Jaina looked at her.
Problem? Anything I can help with? Ship? Ship!
Alima opened her mouth wide, as though to scream, and then vanished from sight, along with the Minok. The scream did reach Jaina's ears, tiny and distant, from far below. Leia kept her guard up and her wits about her, but it was clear. Alima was slowing, tiring. In their last exchange, the Twi'lek sledgehammer-like blows had grown weaker. Now Alima disengaged, took a step back, opened her mouth for another jibe, and her eyes snapped open wide, as though she'd been stabbed from behind. Her next breath was a gasp. Then she disappeared, fading instantly from sight.
The flight of Minox, Jag in tow, entered another narrow passage. Jag's captor swung in toward the side, allowing him to scrape along the rocky tunnel. A protruding stone caught him in the back, not hurting him, but bouncing him up away from the wall. They entered a new chamber. Jag's sensors picked up a wall in the near distance, perhaps 30 meters away. The Minox angled toward an aperture, and then they were gone, leaving him hurtling toward the vertical stone surface ahead. He kicked in his thruster pack, slowing himself, but the Minox had been moving fast. Despite his braking maneuver, he hit the wall hard. He heard and felt a crack from his left leg, and vision failed as if his sensors had all suddenly been switched off. Alima stood, legs shaking from where she had fallen, her senses, back in her own body after too many minutes divided among several phantoms, cast out in the force, looking for ship. Ship was distant. Ship was fleeing. Ship was happy.
Come back!
She poured her strength of will into her command, but her effort was too late, too distant. Ship sped onward, uncaring. This was bad. Now, instead of having an escape method close at hand, she would have to ascend to the asteroid's surface, past the Jedi and the idiot soldier who led them, to steal whatever vehicle had brought them. As she clambered into the rail car, she tried to make herself small in the force, so that it would be more difficult to find her. She pushed it toward up, and the car began gliding up the rails.
Aboard the Poison Moon.
New contact, Captain.
Ithila sent her sensor board display to Dissian's monitor. Its image, now far less pixelated but wavering because of the Poison Moon's maneuvers, showed the asteroid habitat. A starfighter-sized craft emerging from beneath the structure headed starward. Dissian sat forward. Tiny as it was on the monitor, this was clearly a Sith meditation sphere. The vehicle that had brought Alima Rar to Korriban. Just as clearly, the Twi'lek was making her escape in it.
All weapons bear on the meditation sphere. At my command...
Captain, the vehicle is empty.
Dissian blinked. She reached out toward the sphere through the force and sensed its mind, its desire, but no occupant. So Alima Rar was still on the asteroid. Interesting. She was having no luck destroying the Millennium Falcon. The freighter's pilot was just too good. Evidence that Han Solo was indeed at the controls. His death would be a great prize, but worth only bragging rights. The meditation sphere, on the other hand, was something tangible. Something Dissian could have, could keep. It would be the envy of every member of her order. She looked at Wanis.
Have the shuttle crews reported in? Are all the explosive charges in place?
Yes, Captain. The big one just activated and delivered. You can begin detonating them any time you like.
Follow that new contact.
As the Poison Moon heeled over on its new course, she added,
Tell the shuttle crews to assemble on... What's our designation for the largest asteroid in this belt?
Omega 379.
On Omega 379. We'll be back for them. Probably.
She reached out for the meditation sphere and was gratified to still feel it. A pulse of dark energy, precisely attuned to the ways and wishes of her order.
Where are you going, charming one?
She expected no answer, but got one. The clear image of a distant world, arctic, forested, a menacing blue-white eye in a sea of darkness. Zyost, original homeworld of the Sith. She flicked a finger at Wanis.
Lay in a course for Zyost. All speed. We'll see if we can beat the little fellow there and scoop him up as he arrives.
Yes, Captain.
And just before we enter hyperspace, begin the bomb-triggering sequence.
Yes, Captain.
Dissian smiled.
Congratulations, everyone, on the perfect resolution to a perfect mission.
They're running.
Leia, once again in her rear-facing seat position, turned to stare through the forward viewports.
What?
They're running.
Han leaned back and stretched nonchalant.
I chased them off.
On the asteroid, far away from the habitat, light flared, a brilliant, piercing white glow. As it faded, Han and Leia could see damage remaining where it had been. A black and red hole, tiny at this distance, through which atmosphere began venting in a column that rapidly grew to be kilometers tall. Even at the distance of half a kilometer, Jaina saw the rail car ascending toward her. It had running lights, making it easy to spot in the darkness. A quick touch with the Force confirmed that neither Jag nor Zek was in control of the vehicle. With her lightsaber, she cut through both rails of the track, then hauled herself up a few meters and cut through again, slicing away a span of track. Then she hauled herself back up, coming to a stop 20 meters above the gap she'd created. The rail car hit the gap. A small figure was ejected from the lead car. Alima rose, hurtling past the gap, and grabbed at a crosstie, coming to an abrupt stop a handful of meters below Jaina. Jaina smiled down at her.
Hello again.
Alima's mouth twisted.
This is no longer a game. Get out of our way. For me, it was never a game. Say, how are you going to climb the track and swing a lightsaber with only one working arm? We will find a way.
Alima ascended another few crossties. Now she was only 3 meters beneath Jaina's feet.
You could surrender. Throw away your lightsaber and your blowgun and darts and other toys. Pretty much everything on your person. And I'll take you to safety. And you'll live.
Alima shook her head. Her half-length brain tail came free of her hood.
With the universe still out of balance, with the wicked not punished, we think not.
Then it came. A low, rumbling roar from some great distance to Jaina's left. She peered off into the darkness, remaining mindful of Alima's position through her sense of the Force.
Some new trap? We were about to ask you the same thing.
A speaker box aboard the mangled rail car began talking, its voice speaking basic with a light, lilting accent Jaina had never heard before.
Attention, all workers of Jonex Mine 811B. Our sensors indicate a catastrophe-level event. Seek the nearest Omega-designated shelter immediately. Activate all emergency beacon composts at once. Attention, all workers of Jonex Mine 811B.
She glanced down at Alima.
Sounds bad. Guess we'd better stay here until we find out what's gone wrong.
Alima released her grip on the crosstie, but did not drift away from the track. She climbed a step toward Jaina, manipulation of the Force keeping her steady on the crossties, and drew forth her lightsaber.
Get out of our way!
There was another distant rumble, this time from the right. Jaina's ears popped from a change in pressure.
Sorry, what was that again? Idiot!
Alima waved a sweeping gesture, as if slicing with a vibroblade. Energy, invisible, reeking of the dark side, slammed into Jaina, forcing her back. The blow drove the wind from her lungs and sent a wave of pain through her chest. Alima leapt up past her. She landed on a crosstie 20 meters above Jaina. She began climbing as though the vertical track were a staircase, using only her feet and the Force. A blaster bolt from above caught her nearly by surprise. Alima got her blade up in time to absorb some of it, but the impact knocked her back and away from the track. She fell 50 meters or more and was almost swallowed by darkness before she recovered sufficiently to vector back toward the lower section of track. Grimacing with pain, Jaina looked up. Descending toward her was Jag. Jaina moved hand over hand along the track. If she got high enough fast enough, she could cut free another section, perhaps making the gap too great for Alima to leap past, even in this low gravity. The track wavered as something hit the angled section she had just left. She glanced back. Jag was there, standing on one leg. Through his visor, Jaina could see that he was sweating, probably from pain. He glanced down toward Alima.
Did you give her the chance to surrender?
Jaina nodded.
She said no, rudely. That's it, then.
He jerked a thumb upward, signaling for her to climb.
Go. I'll stay. We have to deal with Alima. I'll deal with Alima. Someone's using explosives, city busters at least, and they've cracked the shell of this asteroid. The atmosphere's venting, and Zek, he's one chamber up and he's a mess. I can't get him to leave.
He'll die here if you don't help him.
Jaina looked down at the climbing Alima, up at the distant gap into the next chamber, and finally at Jag.
You're going to die!
Maybe, but my suit can handle hard vacuum for an hour or more. Yours, with your mask, 5 minutes. Who dies first?
Go on. When you get to the next cavern, cut the track free.
Good luck!
She leapt up, and began climbing as fast as her strength and boosts from the Force would allow her. Jag pulled a pouch free of his utility belt and jammed it onto the metal of the track he stood on. Then he fired off his thruster and ascended. Below, Alima leapt across the gap separating the lower track from the upper. She landed exactly where Jag had stood moments ago. Jag made sure his comlink was active.
Boom one!
He wasn't fast enough. He'd uttered the first word when Alima gestured. The explosives package he'd affixed to the rail sailed free of the track. It exploded a moment later, far enough away that it did no more to Alima than cause the track she stood on to sway. She stared up at him, murder in her eyes, and began climbing again, almost as fast as Jaina, faster than Jag's poor low-gravity thrusters could carry him. As she climbed, the bent section of track beneath her twisted back the other way, and then again toward her, and finally came free entirely, a broken section 4 meters long. Rapidly, borne by invisible powers of the Force, it rose past Alima, flying straight toward Jag. He grimaced.
This is going to hurt.
The track came level with Jag, a few meters away, then swung toward him like a club, one end remaining in place, the other end hammering at his midsection. The Beskar plate took the force of the blow, but that merely meant it distributed the impact across his entire chest. Jag hurtled to one side, like a ball kicked by a rancor. His left leg, probably already broken at the thigh, was suddenly engulfed in greater pain, as though his bone marrow had been replaced by a lit lightsaber blade. He flew perhaps 30 meters, but the flying section of track got ahead of him and swung again, batting him back toward Alima. Still, the breastplate held. Still, he could breathe, could think. Barely. His body, a jangled mass of fiery nerve endings, he crashed into the remaining section of vertical track a couple of meters beneath Alima. He managed to clamp his left crush gaunt onto it.
We are sure you flew your X-Wing.
Alima's face was now covered by a transparasteel mask, probably the one she wore when escaping her own trap at Galadar 8, Jag guessed.
Your companions will not have sabotaged it. They want you to escape, so we will leave in it.
It took an effort to make the words emerge in recognizable fashion.
Alima, you're never going to leave this asteroid. Your insanity and the last traces of the Dark Nest end here and now.
Fast as a striking sand panther, Jag drew his oversized blaster and aimed it at Alima. He wasn't fast enough. She did not even look down at him. While he was in mid-draw, Alima released her lightsaber and crooked a finger at his blaster. It flew from Jag's grasp into her hand. Her lightsaber floated beside her. Alima looked down at him and shook her head.
You die because you oppose us, because you insult the Nest. But most of all, you die because you refuse to learn.
Oh, but I do learn, Jag said to himself. The sensor inside that blaster is now informing its processor that it's gone beyond a certain distance from me. 5.
Droids firing lasers. Now that would have been intelligent and dangerous to us.
4.
We cannot feel droid intent, and lasers travel faster than the eye can follow.
3.
Such an attack executed from secrecy might well have hurt or killed us.
2.
But now, we will simply cut you to pieces.
1.
And in that last moment, though Jag had tried to concentrate solely on his pain, on his sense of desperation and failure, something of his growing anticipation must have leaked through his emotional barriers. Alima's eyes widened. She looked back and forth for the new danger she was just beginning to sense. Alima's face was contorted in shock and pain. Her right arm was gone from just below the elbow. Blood trailed from it, bubbling and evaporating where it left her injury. As Jag reached her, he grabbed her neck in his right hand. She looked at him,
Her expression changed from pain to plea.
He shook his head. He could see that there was fear in her eyes, but not fear of death. Her lips moved, forming a single word.
Remember.
He nodded. I will. The pain and fear in her expression eased. Jag squeezed. He felt the crack of Alima's vertebrae under his hand as they shattered. Her body went limp. Her eyes became unfocused and distant.
Jaina found Zek perched atop a section of track, exactly where she had stood when Alima's mysterious weapon had attacked her and severed the rails. Despite the fact that the air pressure was dropping rapidly, Zek did not have his mask on.
Zek, get moving!
She fumbled around in his belt pouch, found his foil mask, and slipped it over his head, drawing it cinched tight around his collar.
He shook his head, not looking at her.
Go on. You need to leave.
We need to leave.
She tugged at his shoulder, bringing him to his knees.
It's in me. The evil of this place. I thought I'd be able to keep it at bay forever. No, it doesn't work that way.
She crouched, getting her arms around his waist, and then straightened, propelling them both up toward the next section of track.
Zek, are you my friend?
I'm your friend. I love you.
His words emerged almost as a babble, running together and inflectionless.
I need you to help me, if I'm going to get out of here alive.
They crossed the gap, and she grabbed the next section of track.
Now climb, or I'll carry you, and I'll be slow, and I'll die.
All right.
Mechanically, he turned, got his hands on the cross ties, and began climbing. They reached the surface and found the track intact up to the habitat above, but the track shook under their fingers, and they could both see the stony ground shaking all around them, kicking up clouds of dust and oddly beautiful streamers. Jaina saw a distant flash to spinward, sign of an explosion beyond the horizon. She grabbed Zek and kicked free, leaping toward the hole into the habitat above. Together, they floated through. As the artificial gravity of the habitat hit them, they dropped, landing awkwardly on the lip of the hole.
Jaina breathed a sigh of relief.
Then the shockwave from the last explosion hit. The ground, 15 meters down, rippled as though it were cloth laid atop water. Jaina felt her legs shaking, from external vibrations rather than exhaustion. Jag's X-Wing, visible beneath the hole, rose on one wing as if banking, then tumbled out of sight. The vibrations increased. The habitat suddenly tilted. The chamber was plunged into darkness, relieved only by the circle of lights around the exit hole, and the two Jedi floated free of the floor. Suddenly, the view through the hole showed more ground, then distant horizon, then stars. The habitat was free of the asteroid, kicked loose by successive explosions, and was tumbling. When the two Jedi forced open the door into the hangar, they found everything beyond in a state of chaos. Dim emergency lighting revealed two stealth X's, dozens of Durasteel storage barrels, two refueling pumps, and countless hundreds of hand tools circulating through the large open space, ricocheting in a slow and stately way, in the case of the snub fighters, off the walls, and colliding with other free-floating debris. As Jaina watched, one cylindrical metal barrel collided with a strike foil of Zek's Stealth X and partially crumpled. Its lid popping free, the greenish hydraulic fluid it held slowly pouring out into the atmosphere and spreading. The control board for the hangar door and its atmosphere shield was dead. Jaina glanced at Zek and gestured at the metal storm they faced.
No way to manage a safe launch. Get in your cockpit. I'll get the hangar doors open.
Zek shook his head.
You'll be sucked right out into the void when you do.
He sounded a bit stronger, as though distance from the pool of dark side energy was restoring his spirits.
I'll use a shadow bomb.
The Falcon's comm board made a brief crackling noise. Then Leia could hear Jaina's voice across it.
No checklist, no time. Arming.
Zek was next.
Shields up.
Shields up, copy. Repulsor lifts to max. Hold yourself in place.
Leia felt a weight, something like 10 tons, drop away from her shoulders. She keyed her comm board.
Jaina?
Firing!
One wall of the distant tumbling habitat blew out, venting atmosphere and a cloud of particulate matter. A moment later, one Stealth X emerged, then another, trailing more debris.
One after the other, they angled toward the Falcon. Jaina's next words were stronger.
Yes, Mom?
Are you all right?
As well as can be expected.
Jaina's tone was joyless.
What about Alima and Jag?
There was a long pause before Jaina's response.
Both dead, I think.
Han and Leia watched their monitor screens as the Falcon's rear holocam showed them the last few seconds in existence of the asteroid. One moment, it was there. The next, it was replaced by a bright glow and an expanding pulse of energy. Glum, Han activated his comm board.
Sensors show an energy yield that says fission bombs to me. I don't think anyone has used fission bombs since near the start of the Yuuzhan Vong War.
Leia shook her head.
Somebody was very serious.
No one answered over the comm board, but a noise came from the speakers. Labored breathing. Leia frowned and activated her microphone.
Zek, is that you?
Not me.
It's me.
The voice was Jag's, pained.
Jag?
Four people spoke his name simultaneously. Jaina, loudest of all. She added,
How did you get off the asteroid? Got to the surface. Calmed my astromech, and it gave me distance and bearing to my X-Wing. Fortunately, it was upright, just covered in dust. But it's damaged, and I don't think I can calculate a hyperspace jump right now.
Han heaved a sigh of relief.
Don't worry about it, kid. We'll run the numbers for you. You just catch up to us.
He activated his transceiver, giving Jag's X-Wing a clear signal to home in on.
Will do, sir.
And don't call me sir. I hate that.
Understood, sir.
Sanctuary Moon of Endor, Jedi Outpost.
Luke and Ben, similarly clad in dark Jedi robes, swept into the communications center. At a nod from Luke, the Jedi technician on station there withdrew into the corridor, leaving them alone with the hologram of Han and Leia. Han's hologram offered Luke a lopsided smile.
Hey, old buddy.
It's good to see you.
Luke's gesture suggested he would prefer to be able to embrace his sister and brother-in-law. A live holocom transmission all the way from Bamil? This is an extravagance for you, isn't it? Leia nodded.
Big news calls for a big show. Luke, Alima Rar is dead.
Luke let out a long breath. She gave you no choice?
None.
Leia's tone was decisive.
Jag is badly injured. Zek is a bit perturbed, but coming out of it. Jaina is unhurt. Also, the asteroid was destroyed.
Luke cocked an eyebrow at her. That seems a little excessive. Han snorted.
Not our doing, Luke. An unmarked frigate attacked while we were doing our support role thing. They launched shuttles that planted fission bombs all over the asteroid. Then they left. Alima's weird little Sith ship got away too. But it was unoccupied.
And there's no hint as to who blew up the asteroid? Or why? Han shook his head.
A complete mystery. And you know how I feel about complete mysteries.
You don't care, as long as they don't interfere with you getting paid. Han grinned.
Something like that.
Leia said,
We're going to transport Jag to you. Jaina and Zek will escort us in.
Luke nodded. It'll be good to see you. On the outpost roof, Luke sat cross-legged on the hard surface of the landing pad, his back straight, a meditative posture. He opened himself to the Force and could feel the vibrancy of life around him, the energies of all the people in the outpost, the vitality of all the growing things. There was a hum, the distinctive noise of the roof access lift. Luke could feel the Force presence of his son around.